warfare that they were just beaming these beams down that have, again, the ability to send in billions of watts of energy, the equivalent of a small nuke, and just shooting them into the tectonic plates, loosening them up so that they would eventually shift, slide, and cause a big earthquake.
Okay, so we have motive.
We have some unexplained seismic activity
now,
around the time. And then we have the most suspicious evidence of all, the unexplained actions of government and military.
Yeah, like what? Did it work?
Apparently, according to some people, according to Tsunami Society President Professor Tad Murty of the University of Manitoba, quote, "There's no reason for a single individual to get killed in a tsunami, since most areas had anywhere from 25 minutes to 4 hours before a wave hit." And basically, there was a myth going around that you had to have these little buoys in the water to have an early warning system. Nonsense. All you had to do was have one guy watching the seismic activity in the area, and then pick up a phone and call the governments of the world. Now, apparently that happened. Charles McCreary of the Pacific Warning Center in Hawaii confirmed that his team tried to get in touch with his counterparts in Asia. According to McCreary, director of the National Oceans and Atmospheric Administration Center in Honolulu, the team did its utmost to contact these countries. He said, we started thinking about who we could call. We called the State Department Operations Center and the military. We called embassies. We talked to the Navy in Sri Lanka, any local government official we could get a hold of. We were fairly careful who we called. We wanted to call people who could help. Now, there is evidence in the India Daily News that these calls got through, but they only got through to the effect that the governments in question notified their militaries. The governments in question did not notify their people. Now, that seems to be the most strange thing of all, is that the governments in the area, they all knew, they were all warned, they all notified their military, hey, watch out for the big wave, but nobody phoned their people to announce on the radio that there was a big wave, and therefore no warnings were passed on to the local population.
Okay, now you know how in 911, when the planes were flying in, they were actually doing a military exercise in the area for that exact thing, and how in the past we have, like, basically government and military precognition, and they have the military there waiting, or they have, you know what I mean? They know what's going to happen. Was there any indications of that?
Well, the funny things around the military were not only that they were warned and they weren't, they got out of the way, or they prepared themselves and stayed away from the oceans, they battened down the stuff, but also they instead of sending their hospital ships, they sent their warships, and they took over bases that weren't occupied since the Vietnam War.
Who did?
The U.S. military. They had hospital ships, one of which was named the Mercy. Only later on, after there was like people were up in arms over it, that they sent the Mercy. But there is lots of funny things going on here. I've reprinted all the questions that were printed out by this researcher, Michael Shostadovsky, on December 29th, 2004, that made me start asking questions myself. U.S. scientists in Hawaii had advanced knowledge regarding an impending catastrophe, failed to contact their Asian counterparts. I guess they sent out a fax to the other early warning system centers in the Sri Lanka area, but like a fax or an email, that they should have, of course, called them too. So I'm not sure just who was in on it, who was
right in between the, like, Britney Spears XXX, you know what I mean, those, like, you know, spam is in between, tsunami gonna hit,
Yeah.
Britney Spears, XXX images.
Yeah. Would you like a longer penis?
Yeah, that stuff.
So there was also some email sent, but it seems to me that you want to be picking up the phone. So I'm not sure just who was told to send the email and who didn't pick up the phone. But I just think it's so horrible that not only the earthquake was in the area where Exxon wanted to destroy a independence movement, but also that the Indonesian government is doing their best to withhold aid from this area. And no one's covering that side of it. The media aren't questioning that part of it, that it could have, you know, that there is such a thing as earthquake creating weapons, and that this might have been the first instance of this weapon coming into use, so Exxon could have even more of the world's oil, just like they lied about the weapons of mass destruction in order to get Iraq's oil. They're lying about their own weapons in order to get Aceh's oil.
Now, there have been some theories saying that the amount of natural gas that Exxon pumps out of the earth there, like these 60 billion cubic meters a day, that it was affecting the tectonic plates, that somehow by sucking out all this gas, you're leaving, huge caverns underground, that somehow weakened the created geological instability.
It's an interesting theory. I'm more interested in finding out more about HAARP, but if you have anything else that you'd like to add to this discussion, mm-hmm. I welcome you to post it up in these forums, and people, instead of just relying on the news, the corporate media, or the tame CBC for their news, they can rely upon each other and evaluate all this information for themselves, and then I think together we can have a better news gathering system than most anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed some other funny things. So World Vision is one of the kind of relief charity systems going.
Ouch.
A little digging into their past.
Oh my God.
Reveals that World Vision is basically a CIA front and an assassination school, and that the head of World Vision was a guy named Hinckley Sr., whose son made a name for himself by shooting Reagan. They also, World Vision was responsible for training another famous fellow named Mark David Chapman. He was kind of like, working their summer camps and also their assassination schools in Lebanon. And they also were famous for providing the security systems at Jonestown and taking over Jonestown after everyone drunk the Kool-Aid. So if you're going to give, I suggest give to the Red Cross, don't give to World Vision. They're nothing but a CIA front and a nasty bunch of mofos at that.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And then there's, there's other bizarre coincidences, like someone else posted this, that a massive earthquake in Asia unleashed a tsunami, killing thousands exactly 1 year to the hour after the BAM Iran earthquake killed 2,600. What are the odds of two of the most destructive earthquakes in decades occurring exactly 1 year apart, almost to the minute? Very, very interesting. It was only a 6.6 on the Richter scale, but the quake is centered directly under the city. And then there is another post I found here of the Indonesian military government using biological warfare tapeworms embedded in pigs in order to take over the oil-rich province of West Papua New Guinea.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, a little weapons of mass destruction oil takeover in this part of the world, a little tsunami oil takeover in this part of the world, a little biological warfare oil takeover in this part of the world. Same frickin' company.
Yeah, we covered this a couple times on the radio show, is the epicenters of earthquakes being at high high security research facilities, like in Japan or India or other countries where they're doing research into weaponry or research or nuclear weapons, that kind of thing, where all of a sudden the epicenter of the earthquake is right basically under the laboratory.
Huh.
And that's been linked to HAARP.
Yeah, there are other... I've come across information that suggests that there are other HAARPs around the world. But I welcome you to post in this forum. It's a kind of anything goes. We can talk about anything and people don't really get upset because it's the conspiracy forum.
Yeah.
But I saw fit to include a couple of words about conspiracies from the Wikipedia definition and Noam Chomsky, and I think we should probably end on those notes because
okay.
A lot of people just call it conspiracy so they don't have to think about it anymore and just dismiss it.
Well, a lot of people too are like, how dare you talk about that tsunami, you know, hundreds of thousands
yeah.
of people dying, and here you're trying to make a trifle out of it by saying it's some kind of beam, you know, like I've heard
no.
that in town, so...
No, I want to understand it, and I do want to understand, you know, nuclear weapons have been around for years and years, but it doesn't mean they've stopped making bizarre and horrible and terrible weapons, and,
yeah.
and people should take this opportunity to learn more about HAARP and to even start asking questions as to why the military... all the militaries in the region were warned and none of the people were, to start asking questions why if the guys who monitor the seismic activity of the world, all they had to do was pick up a phone and they had 20 minutes to do so, how come the warning didn't get out? That these are legitimate questions that should be answered. And I will, I'll read to you this little Wikipedia thing about the quote about conspiracy theories. They say, the waters are muddied by the fact that powerful groups or individuals may have an interest in trying to discredit those who accuse them of real or imagined crimes. The label of conspiracy theory has been used to mock or degenerate social and political dissent. For instance, when a powerful public figure is accused of corruption. And then Chomsky was being interviewed, someone asked him a question. He said, well, do you feel also, I mean, I know that you have advanced these arguments and a number of other people have also advanced these arguments. They are there to be found by anyone who wants to seek them out. But at the same time, I think there's a great effort in the mainstream media to write these arguments off as conspiracy theory. And then Chomsky replies, well, that's one of the devices by which power defends itself, by calling any critical analysis of institutions a conspiracy theory. If you call it by that name, then somehow you don't have to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Edward Herman and I, in our recent book, Manufacturing Consent, go into this ploy. What we discuss in that book is simply the institutional factors that essentially set parameters for reporting and interpretation of the ideological institutions. Now, to call that a conspiracy theory is a little bit like saying that when General Motors tries to increase its market share, it's engaged in a conspiracy. And it's not. I mean, part of the structure of corporate capitalism is that the players in the game try to increase profits and market share. In fact, if they did, they would no longer be players in the game. Any economist knows this, and it's not a conspiracy theory to point that out. It's just taken for granted. Some would say, oh no, that's a conspiracy, people would laugh. Well, exactly the same is true when you discuss the more complex array of institutional factors that determine such things as what happens in the media. It's precisely the opposite of conspiracy theory. In fact, as you mentioned before, I generally tend to downplay the role of individuals. They're replaceable pieces. So it's exactly the opposite of conspiracy theory. It's normal institutional analysis. The kind of analysis you do automatically when you're trying to understand how the world works. And to call it conspiracy theory is to simply part of the effort to prevent an understanding of how the world works. And I generally agree with that and want to apply it to everything. It's like, is it wrong to ask questions about how powerful your government or your Air Force has become? Is it wrong to ask questions about coincidences that just happen to help out the most powerful corporations in the world exploit even more of the world's oil? And definitely, people need to type in the words peak oil into Google and start to learn about peak oil, because that's very serious theory and has nothing to do with conspiracies, but it's a theory that suggests that the world is running out of oil and that there will be a time when the price of oil starts to shoot up dramatically, just as the production is peaking and then starts to fall off. And then when people realize that there's no more oil, or there won't be very much oil, the price will increase and the blackouts will start. And then it'll be kind of like a Y2K, that any job that involves oil or energy will start to become very expensive, and people will lose their jobs, and people will go hungry, and that's what, you know, a lot of the information on COP-BCIA, Michael Rupert's website, is all about, peak oil.
Yeah.
Now, there's this really fantastic book that just came out. I mentioned it earlier. It's called It's the Crude Dude. It's by a woman writer. I do believe she writes for one of the Toronto newspapers. Her name is Linda McCrae. And she goes into the economy of energy quite deeply. And she points out just how much of our resources are taken up subsidizing these fossil fuels, and how if we shifted the subsidy over away from fossil fuels and these fuels that are easy to monopolize, but we end up starting wars and doing horrible things in order to control, and we shifted it to, say, hemp and biodiesel and biomass fuels, that we could avoid this catastrophe, this peak oil catastrophe that's about to come out. We won't have to, you know, cut the population by two-thirds or some other drastic, you know, stupidity.
Yeah.
We can just start farming our energy, growing our energy instead of taking it from the earth. And we can also avoid global warming and climate change this way, because, you know, it's a fixed system that you're pumping oxygen back out into the atmosphere as you farm this energy, and you're not creating this climate change situation. And then everyone wins except for Exxon. And, you know, it's about time they lost one. They've been creating horrible wars and
spilling
our planet just for their profits for 100 years now or longer. It's about time we shifted away from the synthetic fuel economies and move to the natural fuel economy.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's my little spiel. That's all I could think of sharing with you tonight. But
no,
I
know that's awesome. And like, normally, without someone as thorough as yourself, I'd be somewhat skeptical.
Well,
you know
I'm
what I
still
mean?
Skeptical.
Like, no, but I mean, I wouldn't. You tend to research things pretty deeply, and not, you know what I mean? Like, you tend to source things out, where they got the sources, that kind of thing, and that adds a lot of legitimacy to the argument,
yeah,
or
well,
the investigation.
Yeah, well, I'm not 100% certain that HAARP was used to start this earthquake, but I've seen enough that I know more questions should be asked and more people should look into this.
Mm-hmm.
And people should meet up on the internet and in other places and start asking these questions, and maybe in public people should start asking questions.
So listeners, if you've been sparked into thought by this interview, you can go to cannabisculture.com, go to forums, and go to the conspiracy corner and add your thoughts, ideas, clips, news stories, or any even your opinion to the ongoing debate on the tsunami.
That's right. Add your evidence and, you know, either for or against this theory, and build it up, make it strong. And then the artists, it's up to the artists and writers to put it in a package that other people can handle and get it out there. And learn more about chemtrails. Learn more about Global Vision and their ties to the CIA. Learn about HAARP and it's what it's been doing for the last couple of years. Learn about the Rockefellers. Learn about Exxon.
And
involve yourself. Try to understand the world and then act to change it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an amazing collection of information, regardless of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just the information there is amazing.
I just came across something else today. It's completely unrelated, but people should know about it as well. It's that the new government in Iraq is going to make the farmers in Iraq have to buy all their seeds from the gene giants, all the Terminator strain seeds, the genetically modified seeds.
No.
They're going to break up an economy that has been basically self-sufficient for the longest time, for 3,000 or 4,000 years.
How about forever?
Yeah, and then just twist it into an economy of dependency and corporate control. And they say, oh, it's all about freedom, more freedom in Iraq, and spreading freedom to Iraq. Well, how free is it when you have to buy your seats from the same guy every year instead of supplying it yourself?
Well, it's
going to be illegal for Iraqis to save their own seats because it's all property. It's all modified, so it's like a patent, and people have to buy it from the same company every year.
And the words are becoming like trademarks for Coca-Cola and freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom, Coca-Cola. PM. Yeah, Coca-Cola and democracy.
That's right.
Are proud sponsors of this news event.
Every time you use the word freedom, you got to pay like $50 to some Swiss banker or something. It's ludicrous. I do not subscribe to the belief that intellectual, information should be a proprietary, should be property. I mean, the Native North American Indians believe that once you take something to the group and share it with the group, it's no longer yours, it's the group's. And that seems to me a way better way of spreading information around.
Yeah.
The information wants to be free.
Yeah.
So share this information with your listeners, both of them who are listening right now.
Yeah.
Check it out on your internet.
Okay.
Come down to cannabisculture.com, get involved, and learn more.
Right on. Thanks a lot, David, for
being
here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I always appreciate it.
I was going crazy just having all this information to myself. I needed to share it with somebody. I feel a lot better now.
Yeah, we would like to have you on more often, too. Maybe we could have you every couple weeks or every month. And
you know where I am. Give me a call.
There's always interesting things to keep up to date on. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Love you, David.
I'll dig up something else for you in a couple weeks.
Okay, great.
All right.
Okay, peace, brother.
Hasta luego.
Bye. That was David Malmo Levine calling in from the West Coast Research Center, located in a secret villa. No, I'm kidding, but go to cannabisculture.com forums, conspiracy theories, and you can go and get the kind of long form of the information that we talked about on the show today. This next tune is going out to DJ Alun. And, love you, brother. Here we go.
Don't fear your best friends, because a best friend will never try to do you wrong. Don't fear your worst friends, because the worst friend's just the best friend that's done you wrong. And don't fear the night time, nah, because the monsters know that you're divine. And don't fear the sunshine, because everything's better in the summertime. And it's never too late to start the day over. It's never too late, pick up the phone and call me. It's never too late to lay your head down on my shoulders. It's never too late to come on home, come on home. Don't fear the water, inside you, within your skin. And don't fear your father, cause the father's just a boy without a friend. And don't fear to walk slow, no. Don't be a horse race, be a marathon. And don't fear the long road,
come on,
cause on the long road you got a long time to sing a simple song, sing along. And it's never too late to start the day over. It's never too late, pick up the phone and call. It's never too late to lay your head down on my shoulders. It's never too late to come on home, come on home.
you listen, you can hear music in a school bell. Don't fear your preacher.
Oh, no.
If he can't find heaven in a prison cell. And don't fear your own self.
Don't fear yourself.
Paying money to justify your worth. Your family, because you chose them a long time before your birth. Yes, you did, and it's never too late to start the day over. It's never too late. Pick up the phone, pick up the phone and call me. It's never too late to lay your head down on my shoulders. It's never too late. Come on home. I say it's never too late. Stop the day over. It's never too late. Pick up the phone. Pick up the phone and call me. It's never too late. To lay your head down on my shoulders. It's never too late. To come on home. Come on home. Hold to your children. Your children, hold to your children, let them know, let them know, let them know.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to CUNY Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM, CGLY, broadcasting live from Nelson. Now, coming up on February 2nd is the pagan holiday known as Imbolc, or Imolc by the Druids, and it is the festival of the lactating sheep. It is derived from the Gaelic word oimelc, which means ewe's milk. Herd animals have either given birth to the first offspring of the year, or their wombs are swollen and the milk of life is flowing into their teats and udders. It is the time of blessing of the seeds and the consecration of agricultural tools. So, time to dig out your cannabis seeds, time to dig out your shovel, get the wire brush and get rid of the rust, and put good intention into your farm implements. And, gather up your seeds and your goodies and start getting ready for the spring that's coming. It's coming. It marks the center point of the dark half of the year. It is the festival of the maiden. And from this day to March 21st, it is her season to prepare for growth and renewal. Brigid's snake emerges from the womb of the Earth Mother to test the weather, which is the origin of Groundhog Day. And in many places, the first crocus flowers begin to spring forth from the frozen earth. The maiden is honored, and as the bride on this Sabbath, bridiogas or corn dollies are created from oat or wheat straw and placed in baskets with white flower bedding. Young girls then carry the bridiogas door to door, and gifts are bestowed upon the image from each household. Afterwards, at the traditional feast, the older women make special acorn wands for the dollies to hold, and in the morning, the ashes in the hearth are examined to see if the magic wands left marks is a good omen. Brigid's crosses are fashioned from wheat stalks and exchanged as symbols of protection and prosperity in the coming year. Home hearth fires are put out and relit, and a besom is placed by the front door to symbolize sweeping out of the old and the welcoming of the new. Candles are lit and placed in each room of the house to honor the rebirth of the sun. Another traditional symbol of Imbolc is the plow. In some areas, this is the first day of the plowing in preparation of the first planting of crops. A decorated plow is dragged from door to door, with costumed children following, asking for food, drinks, or money. Should they be refused, the household is paid back by having its front garden plowed up. In other areas, the plow is decorated and then whiskey, the water of life, is poured over it. Pieces of cheese and bread are left by the plow, and in the newly turned furrows is offerings to the nature spirits. It is considered taboo to cut or prick plants during this time. Various other names for this greater Sabbat are Imbolc, Brigantia, Caledoni, Imbolc, Disting, Lupercus, St. Bridget's Day, which is, of course, the Christian usurpation of Brigid, and also Brigid was placed as the midwife of Jesus and Mary, Candlemas, Candelaria in Mexico, and the Snowdrop Festival. The Festival of Lights or the Feast of the Virgin, all virgin and maiden goddesses are honored at this time. Some of the deities of Imbolc are Brigid, Aradia, Athena, Inanna, Gaia, Februa, and gods of love and fertility, Angus, Og, Eros, and Phoebus. Some of the symbolism is purity, growth, and renewal, the reunion of the goddess and the god, fertility and the dispensing of the old, and the making of the new way for the new. Some of the symbols that you can use are white flowers, candle wheels, Brigid's crosses, which we talked about, and priapic wands, or acorn-tipped wands, and plows. Some of the herbs you can use are angelica, basil, bay laurel, blackberry, calendine, coltsfoot, heather, iris, myrrh, tansy, violets, and all white or yellow flowers. Some of the good foods for this time are pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, poppy seed cakes, muffin scones, and breads, and all dairy products, peppers, onions, garlic, raisins, spiced wines, and herbal teas. The incenses are basil, bay, wisteria, cinnamon, violet, vanilla, and myrrh. The colors of Imbolc are white, pink, red, yellow, light green, and brown. So it's that time, folks, again. It's Imbolc. It's the midway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. And so, yeah, it's a good time to dig out your seeds and start thinking about the great planting to come this spring. Dig out your tools and start blessing up and start gazing at your garden again, looking at the mounds and the shapes under the snow right now that are soon to be gardens, and start, you know, casting your ideas for the upcoming spring. Where are you going to plant your seeds? What seeds do you have? What your intentions are? Like, spring is coming, and this is a good time to prepare for that time. So, yeah, get on it. It's Imbolc, February 2nd, and good time to just have a kind of, yeah, a preparation for spring and the honoring of all maidens. Now, there is there's a maiden who I'm thinking of right now, and there's sometimes when I'm hit with the sadness of parting, but there's times when she comes into my head, and times when she comes into my heart, and times when she comes into my spirit, and so there's times when I wish she was right here so I could talk to her and I could exchange ideas and I could speak with the maiden. So this next song is going out to Dolores, the maiden of power.
you think you could tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to train your heroes for ghosts, hot ashes for trees, hot air for a cool breeze, cold comfort for change? Did you exchange a walk-on part in the war for a lead role?
Listeners, you're listening to CUNY Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM CGLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.cunycoopradio.com. This is from the province. Canada is now the largest single supplier of pot, speed, and steroids to the United States, says a top customs official. American authorities are making more seizures both at and south of the border, says George Webb, head of counterterrorism and counterproliferation for the Canadian Border Services Agency. At the same time, the flow of illegal drugs to Canada from the U.S. appears to have stabilized, according to the agency. Major drug busts at the Canadian border have been fairly consistent since the mid-1990s. In the old days, the flow of drugs was northbound, coming out of the United States, Webb said yesterday. That has changed. We are now the biggest drug supplier, whether it be BC Bud, methamphetamines, or steroids. Last year, there were 974 large seizures of drugs coming into Canada with a total street value of $269 million, the agency reports. That's down marginally from 1,063 seizures in 2003 when the value was pegged at $600 million. There were 932 significant seizures in 2002 worth $292 million and 873 seizures in 2001 worth $865 million. Nearly 48% of all drug seizures, large and small, were made through the postal system. Another 31% were at land border points. Proceeds of crime seizures have totaled more than $13 million in each of the past 2 years. Most were made in BC and Ontario. This is actually more false information being peddled by our border agencies. The truth of the matter is, if you look at the Canadian justice system, their own statistics, if you look at UN statistics, if you look at USA/Canada statistics, Canada is not the major exporter of drugs to the United States. We still come in at around 2%. You got it. Eugene Oscapella from the Canadian Foundation for Drug Policy refuted that article and other articles that appeared all over Canada, including the Ottawa Sun, touting this as Canada being a major exporter of drugs. It simply is not true. We are not the major exporter of drugs that they're making it out to be. This is just more of the Homeland Security freak out that they're hoping to push so they can get more money and they can put more fear into the population. Everything is just fine. We're not major drug peddlers like they're making us out to be. So let's go to this is a Richard Pryor thing that's pretty funny.
In my neighborhood, cops was dangerous because we had like I Spy cops, right? You know, white cop and black cop worked together. And the black cop had to do more shit to keep his job. You know, he had to work more niggas than the white cop. You know, I ain't gonna lose my pension, nigga. The cops come around, we be singing and shit. Cop, break that up.
You can. What's going on here? Huh? What's this supposed to be? Some kind of community sing? Well, goddammit, let's break it up, huh? And Weasel, you're on parole. I don't want to get in your ass. No, we're going around the block. When I come back, I want everybody gone.
Well, he was gone. The guy sell wolf tickets, right? I ain't gone no place.
Move me.
Me, yes, you guys running around and say, I ain't moving. I didn't have to go to work. But I got a slip. Cops was dangerous.
Sonic Force.
Right in time.
To keep the white back.
You rock my heart.
rock yours.
Together we shine
and knock down doors.
Together we drop
and make new laws.
Show to show
with the rhymes galore.
Giving them raw,
put them on the floor.
Scrabbing and scratching,
cats like claws.
Flossing and glossing,
never take a loss.
Applause to call
with the sign of war.
We go back like men in caves.
Going for saves
with the phrase to pays.
Going for days,
blaze like a raid.
Grace to save
this guys like pages.
They hand sounds up to pretty faces.
Hitting mates with the funky bass.
Can't fake this,
the player hates this.
We set the paces
and win in races.
That's the freestyle, the beat, the GL.
Thank you. it out, y'all. Hand it out, y'all. Hand it out, y'all. Hand it out, y'all. Old school, rock the house. Old school's gonna turn it out, y'all. Hand it out, y'all. Hand it out, y'all. Hand it out, y'all.
Soul, Sonic, Force, with the freestylers. Soul, Sonic, Force, with the freestylers. Soul, Sonic, Force, with the freestylers. Soul, Sonic, Force, with the freestylers.
Who's that focus of self? You lose memory of the experience. Then you just say, well, then there was an hour period where I don't know what happened. Well, if you don't know what happened, unless we imagine that it's retuning you so far beyond the powers of inspection of the ego that it doesn't matter, well, then it seems that you've probably shot past the mark. The mushrooms are particularly interesting for this because if you take high doses, it will depress your breathing and your heartbeat, and you come into this place where, this is one reason why I always take it alone, almost always alone, because I don't want to alarm another person. You know, yes, I'm going to lie still, and breathing is going to become very slow, and I will not be able to respond to questions put to me. And at that, what's happening to the person then is you get into these places where you say, keep breathing, keep looking, keep breathing, keep looking, and you are sailing through the bardo. I heard a story recently about two people who got together and took a lot of mushrooms. One of them entered into that state. The other one entered into a state of hyper-anxiety over the condition of the first one and spent the whole rest of his trip screaming, literally screaming at the prone person and picking them up and throwing them over their shoulder and pacing back and forth and slapping them around and all this. Well, how can you have a trip when somebody's going nuts like that? You have to. I mean, maybe you need that. If you ever believe, I mean, here's a good, if you believe that someone's vital signs are getting so low that you should take some kind of action, then the kind of action to take is throw them in a cold shower. But not screaming at them or picking them up and dropping them repeatedly, or that's not the approach, you know. Did you want to say something, Ray?
Well, I just wanted to add up on that point about the experiences of light and so forth in the early literature. And my sense is that those experiences, that emphasis was in the theoretical literature, but in terms of actual experiences, I think it was quite a rare experience, and most people had experiences of confusion and hallucination and disorientation, that kind of thing. And a lot of people would regularly go unconscious for longer or shorter periods of time during high-dose LSD trips, as they do during ketamine. They would just go unconscious, and then they'd come back again, there'd be some other vision, and then after a while they'd go unconscious again for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then they'd come back again. Basically, they wouldn't remember anything because people weren't tracking it that way anyway.
Yes, I think you're right. That.
All right, welcome back, listeners. That was Terrence McKenna doing a little talk about mushrooms. And myself, I'm in that train of thought, too. If I'm going to do any heroic doses, I like to do them alone. Just saves, you know, there's very little that can go wrong when you're doing mushrooms. And the insights you get when you're by yourself, and they're just stupendous. Now, Papa Roots is in hospital right now, having suffered some kind of injury while snowboarding or skiing. So I'd hoped to do this earlier in the show, but trying to get interviews going and stuff. So if we can send out our prayers and our blessings, and we'll have the mantra, bone heal, bone heal, bone heal, or just heal. If we can beam Papa Roots with a healing light tonight, that would be a great thing. So listeners out there, put on your harp, your healing harp, psycho frequencies, and we're going to beam the hospital where Papa Roots is right now and get him to heal up. I guess some of the conditions. I'm not sure if it was the conditions or skill level or whatever. I'm not sure, but he's ailing right now in hospital. So if we can beam him with some love vibes, that would be great. Now, I'm going to play this last song, kind of an in-bulk tune. It's called The Wheel of Fortune with John Renborn and Robin Williamson, my favorite. And The Wheel of Fortune, as you may know, is one of the tarot cards and just talks about how there's cycles in life at all times. And so it's kind of a good time right now with in-bulk to recognize the cycles of life, birth, death. Maybe I should be realizing some of those cycles. But anyway, the human heart is a frail thing. So here we go. This is Robin Williamson. For those of you who didn't know, the last tune was from the Freestylers. And they are my favorite right now. I cannot get enough of their beats. They rock it. And that last song was called We Rock Hard. So this is Wheel of Fortune. And then I'll do my usual sappy goodbyes. Okay?
After morning, there comes an evening. After evening, another day. After one love, there comes another.
Oh.
It's hard to keep them that will away. Turn around, you wheel of fortune. Turn around and rise for me, life of man is most uncertain. None can say what may be. When I'd money in every pocket, every welcome was made to me. A fool's and money are easy parted. And poverty parts good company. Turn around, you wheel of fortune. Turn around.